Okay, today's daf is Mem Dalet, and things are about as clear as mud at this point. let's review where we were holding. Basically, the Gemara had a question as to when the Tufa would be Nigvet. What that question was is a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos.
So according to Rashi, we're asking in general, since we have a Ketuvah according to this Tana, and indeed how we paskin, that is Chalas Tznai Bezdin from the time of the Erusin, and you actually write out that Ketuvah in a Shtar form at the time of the Nisuyim, the question is, when do you collect from? Is the collection that we can take out of in the Chasim, the Ramishu Badim, which someone else has already bought it, but we create a lien, is that a lien from the time of the Erusin, the time from the Nisuyim, can partially be collected from the time of the Erusin, so that this would be a general question about collection of Ketuvah, to which Tosfos objects, and what is it doing here? What does it have to do really with our Sugya? Now, of course, it does have to do with our Sugya in a general sense, in that we just raised the issue of whether at the time that the Ketuvah was written, she was still in the Rishus of the father, at the time the Ketuvah was given as a Tznai Bezdin for the Erusin, was she still in the Rishus of the father? And because of that, it would explain Rashi's understanding of how we trigger the issue and now say, well, okay, if that makes enough gemina, then how does it impact upon the overall structure of payment of a ketuvah? But according to Tosfos, according to the Ri, it makes no sense to say that our sugya would be suddenly switching gears to discuss the collection of a ketuvah, unless we're talking specifically about the situation that Rabbi Yehuda himself was referring to, which is a case where we said that Modi Rabbi Yehuda, when someone was ma'aris at bitokashi ktana u'bagra, v'acharkach nis'eich ein lavya reshutva. So that means that we have two cases that we're contrasting. There's someone who's ma'aris as bito and gets married, to someone who's ma'aris as bito and she grows up and becomes a bukeris and gets married. So it's the core reason, as the reason that Revita was moda in this case, is because when it was written, it wasn't written in the Rishos. That's because, and this is what he had said, that all goes according to what is written, is that because at the time you're writing it out, you're basically canceling everything that was before, and the Rabbanan had only given a father the ability to collect when that wasn't just nimchal, when the original time that the ketuvah was given as a tznai bezdin was now canceled. And if that would be the case, then she herself also wouldn't be able to collect from that early date, because now it's going to her. Or the other way of looking at it is that perhaps Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning is not because she now has agreed to a cancellation of the earlier shibud, but rather because the father was given zechus to the ketuvah, Dafkin, circumstances where it had been written Vershuto, but in a case where it wasn't written at all, that's only where it was written, and it was not written as Vershuto, it wasn't written at all, so then it actually would belong to the father, because in the case of the Gerishin, we have a Gerishin from Erison, it's given to him, and therefore that implies that you collect from the earlier time, and if it wasn't written at all, then it would still belong to the father. So according to him, this is a special case question and not necessarily reflective on the general relationship of a ksuvah that's given to my bezdin to a ksuvah that is actually written out later on prior.
We had yesterday, we got into the shaila of what happens if there would be two shtaris. Ravuna taina that there are two different parts of the ksuvah, then obviously there's no tosefet mitnai bezdin by definition. Tosefet means to go above and beyond the norms of the ksuvah. So Raguna Tainet, look, the first part of the Ketuvah, that you have Mitznai Bezdin, can be collected from the time of the Erusin, which means that you can go, and if a field had been sold in between, you have already a lien on that field. Mashenken, the Tosefet is collected, obviously only after you have it written up. So that means that according to Raguna, the fact that it's not written, normally we say that Achrayas is a halacha in a shtar, because if there's no shtar, then there's no way to protect someone who purchases the field. How is he supposed to know that there was a lien against that field? So normally we don't have a din of achrayas, meaning that a din of a shibud that you could be teifes from lukuchi. I'm being driven absolutely mad at this point. But in this case, since everybody knows that she's married, and that's a given that this is tznai bezdin, we will collect. Good. Now, that led us to a little bit of a tangential issue, which is the subject of today's Gemara. Remember that according to this, the Gemara asks a kasha. Yes, let's take a look. Let's review that kasha once again in the Gemara. The Gemara asks, how could it be? Let's just run through it, one third of the way up. Umi Amar Ravuna Hachi, did Ravuna say that in a case where you have a second shtar, so to speak, because over here you have the Tznai Bezdin as your first step, and then you have the real ketuvah that's written out as a second step. So did Ravuna indeed say that you collect part of it over here from the beginning, in other words, the Meya or the Matayim, depending on whether she was an Amon or a Betulah, you collect at the Eris, and the rest you collect later. The problem is, let's say that you have two. Woman comes and she presents two Shtarei Ketuva. They're written on different dates. So one of them is for 200 and one of them is for 300. Now, she gains a certain advantage in utilizing the earlier one, and of course she's going to have to decide if that's what she wants, but because it's dated earlier. Since it's dated earlier, there may have been a field that was available at that time that the lien was chal on that hadn't yet been sold. But between the time and the dates of the first one and the second one, that field was sold. So if she's going to go and collect now from the second one to get 300, she's not going to be able to collect from his nechassim because he already sold those nechassim. He doesn't have any other nechassim. So therefore, there's an advantage in shtar A for collection on an earlier lien. There's an advantage on shtar B because it's for more money. Says Rav Huna, look, you got to make a choice. Batalikvot matayim, gova mizman rishon. Batalikvot gova mizman sheni. If she comes out to collect with shtar A, she gets 200. She's able to be goyva from the earlier date. If, however, she wants to be goyva the 300, she's going to be stuck to be goyva only from the later date. Now, this appears to be inconsistent with what Rav Huna just said. Because Rav Huna just said the fact that you have a later shtar doesn't mean that you lose your rights to take the part that was in the shtar from the earlier time, so to speak. Because in this case, the Tanai Beis Din is equivalent to the shtar. He's saying you're allowed to collect as an arusa from the Tanai Beis Din. No. So if that's the case, do the same thing over here. Collect the first 200 from the earlier shtar, just like the arusa collects Mishas the Erison. Collect the next 100, which is the additional 100 for the 300 ketuvah, from the second shtar. So apparently, Ravuna doesn't told you could split up your shibud. And so how does it make sense to say the Gabe Erison and Asuin you can? If what you just said is true in Ravuna, so then Tigve Matayim is Manishon and Mimeyav is Mansheni. Why can't she have the best of both worlds and get the maximum out of her first lien, which was 200, and then the additional 100 she gets for the second one? Says the Gemara, you're missing the point over here. But the time is, let me ask you something. You've got two separate shtarot. How do you know that the second shtar of 300 is not an additional 300? Maybe she should collect 200 plus 300. I mean, the time is Tigve Chamesh Meyot. Because she could get all Chamesh Meot Kulam, take her Matayim from the first star, and Tlats Meot from the second star. So obviously you're missing the point over here, because if you think that these two Shtarot can exist side by side, then who's to say that they're not collectible side by side? 200 plus 300. Ella, why do you know that that's not the case? Chamesh Meot Matayim Elogavya. Why is she not collecting 500? Because, Kivan Elo Katavla Tziviti Vyasivit Lachlat Mea Matayim. Since, which is the correct girsa, if you want to add to the value of the ketuvah, you say, I like you, and out of my own desire, I wish to add an additional X, in this case 300, to the original 200 of your ketuvah. So therefore, he doesn't mean to do that. What he's doing is he's replacing her original ketuvah. So what he must be telling her is, look, I want to help you out. I'm giving an additional 100. But I'm not doing it through a separate shtar and a tosefet. I'm giving you an additional 100 by offering you an option. I'm giving you a different ketuvah. So you're going to turn to me and say, oh, big shot, you're giving me a different ketuvah. Of course, and now I won't be able to collect from the field that you sold last year. So he says, my darling, I'm not canceling the first star. You can choose. You keep both of them. If you want the first sada, by all means, you'll collect. You can only have 200. If you want the second one, if you want your full 300, so then obviously, if you can't have both, but it's up to you, whatever's best for you. I'm not trying to mess around with
that's
you.
That's what you're going to whatever condition I'll be in, that's...
Exactly. Good. If chas v'shalom, we end up not having any money when I die, and then so then enough, you should go back to... Fine, he didn't. So, Achi Kamala, Im Yizman Rishon Gaviyah Gaviyah Matayim, Im Yizman Sheni Gaviyah Gaviyah Tlat Meah, okay? That's how you know that it's not 500. So by the same token, you also know that you can't split this. The same way you know that you don't collect the full 500, Achi Nami, Hainu Taim Adelo Gaviyah, the reason that you can't split it into the two from the first and the one from the second is because the very nature of the option that is being offered to her means that mitalokativ lo sifit lach mea amatayim, since he in fact did not use the standardized language of a tosefet, which is, I desire to add above and beyond the 200 another whatever amount it is. So what he's telling her is, if you want to use it, here's a replacement. But if you want to use this replacement, then achuli achli lishibud ekama. So then what you're saying is, this is my choice, and I'm moicheles, my ability to collect from the nechassim yishubadim, the original ones. Right? So don't ask me from this case. In the case of, we asked, where Ravuna says, 200 you collect from the time of the erison, and 100 from the time of the nesuim, that's the norm. In other words, we always have a tanai bezdin, and then we add for the Tosefet, that's on every single ktuva. It says in the actual ktuva that Osifit La'umah the Tokan Rabbanan. That's the lashon. I am adding to you above and above. We say Osif Le'midilei, whatever it is. But he was basic. That's the nusach of the ktuva. There's no way that he wrote the ktuva. I mean, unless he went out to do something different. But the norm is you have a ktuva as an arusa. It's taken for granted without being written as it's an ibezdin. You want to actually take it to the chuppah and live with her as man and wife, so you're supposed to have a written ksuvah. That written ksuvah has a normal nusach. The normal nusach is, if you want to go beyond the 200, and I wish to add to you above and beyond the chazilach b'iraita, the Ashkenazim have, the chazilachi, which is the Sfarim have, but whatever it is, it certainly mentions that this is a tosefet. Rav Huna would have been made in this case of the 200 and 300, that if it had been written with that language, it would have been a tosefet, and doesn't imply a mechila of the original shtar. So here in the regular ksuvah, in a normal marriage, you have one piece where you don't mention tosefet, another written shtar where you do mention the tosefet, and then obviously if I want to, I can collect the 200 from before, and whatever you added, I can collect from later, without it being a, why say I was mechelas? Why was I mechelas? You told me you want to add. But in this case, you offered me an option I have to be mechelas if I want to use the second one. This case has nothing to do with Ravun. But out of this case, what we do learn is an amazing thing, because Rav Huna basically ends up saying that Iboy b'hai gavi, she does have an option. She can make a choice. But the problem is that Rav Nachman's psak, which is usually the normative psak of gavi dinin, is that if you present two shtarot, a later dated shtar by definition cancels any earlier shtar. Always. So over here, you've got a later date on the second ksuvah. So what do you mean you have an option? You don't have an option. The later star says, this is the latest information, and the first star, you can forget about, throw it out. So does that mean lema pliga the Rav Nachman? Does this mean that the whole psak over here that we just had, the discussion with Rav Huna argues with Rav Nachman, din yom Rav Nachman shnei shtarot hayatzi b'zachazeh, if you've got two separately dated shtarot, one which is earlier, one which was later, b'tel sheni et harishon, the second one always cancels out whatever was written in the earlier one. What you're asking.
How can we hurt her by without her being mochel, without her decision to be
good? She's presenting the shtar.
But she's saying she has them both. She doesn't understand all of the ramifications.
That's too bad. Get a lawyer. But your point is well taken. If it wouldn't be that she's presenting both, and obviously we can't allow, how do we know that he didn't stammer, that how long is he can write up a shtar shalom if they piled in anyway? The lender. So in this case, I mean, we're going to allow such a thing. How do we know he didn't forge a new idea? Yeah, I'll write her a new tzivit to prevent there to be a lien. I mean, of course, she has to present it. Omer of Papa. Says the Gemara, what's the kasha? La bi yitma Allah. Didn't we say, in explaining Rav Nachman's Allah, that Omer of Papa, of course, made Rav Nachman, that if the second shtar adds something, let's say he sold a whole big field, he didn't mention in the first shtar, oh yes, and the palm tree that's over in the northwest corner is included in this sale. So he writes that out in the second shtar. If he adds something, he osif beidikla, so then it's clear, even if it's a small thing, that the second shtar wasn't written to cancel the first shtar, it was written as the tosefet katri. He wrote because he felt he hadn't made clear how much he's given. So he wants to add, maybe we would say that a mecher is b'ayin ra, a mecher, and he wants to make it clear that he was mecher b'ayin yafa, whatever. But over there, we're not going to say that there was anything now, new information meant to cancel the first, he was adding to the first shtar. Okay, so then there's nothing to discuss. Because then that means that Rav Nachman, by definition, is made to the case where the first star is 200, the second sub is 300. So obviously, he's going to say that that's a kosher star. Therefore, he could agree 100% with Rav Huna. He says, look, you've got your choice. You can have an option. He only says that it's the cancellation where there's no apparent reason for why the second one was written. Unless it's to indicate that the original one's lien was an inappropriate lien. Now, why it would be inappropriate, we're going to ask in a moment. Well, what's the svara? Well, what happened exactly? But the fact, you okay back there, Alejandro?
Yeah.
You look like it's time for Engedi. I can see the dreams in your eyes. So therefore, Rav Nachman and Rav Huna are perfectly over here, perfectly accepting perhaps one or the other. There's no reason to indicate a machlokes. Gufa. Let's take a look at, once already we brought it up, let's take a look at the halakha of Rav Nachman. Omer Rav Nachman, Shnei Shtarot HaYatzi B'Zeh, Bitel Sheniat HaRishon, and Omer, if Papa Moder Rav Nachman the Osif Beidikla Letosefet Katve, that if he added something, it was only written not to cancel the first star, but to clarify the things that he gave. Now let's try to figure out the case. Where is the Chiddush of Rav Nachman? Now, Pshita, Rishon b'mecha v'sheni b'matana. In a case, I mean, you're talking about the Tosefet. Well, let me tell you something. There may be, without mentioning any difference whatsoever in the contents of the shtar, there may be a tremendous nafkamina of a Tosefet. What do I mean? For instance, suppose the first shtar talks about the sale of such and such a field, and the second shtar is about exactly the same field, but it claims that I gave it to him as a gift instead of as a sale. Now, there I understand that the reason that he wrote the second shtar is because he wants the guy to be in better shape. Why would he be in better shape? There is one thing in which a standard matana is better than a sale. What is that? If I sell you a field, and the next door neighbor sues to say that he has the rights of first refusal, and that's the halacha. The Chachamim gave a neighbor who is actually bordering on a field the right of first refusal on a sale, because since to him, and this we base on the halacha of Asisa Yosheva, since to him it's worth far more simply because of scaling. Right? Now he's got two fields that are connected. He's got one large field. For anybody else, it's not worth anywhere near as much as it's worth for him. So he gets the right of first refusal. That right of first refusal is actually a lien. So even if I sold a field and I didn't offer him the right of first refusal, and he finds out about the sale, he can sue to cancel the sale. And he can take the field away from the buyer by giving him back his money. Now, I want to help my buyer, so what I do is I pretend that this was not a sale, it was a gift. Now, you can't say right of first refusal on a gift. I mean, I have a right to get a gift. It's not as if I'm looking to make money over here. I like this guy, I want to give him a gift. I don't like you, and I won't even take the money from you. This field is very valuable to me. It's only a gift to my best friend. So I pretend it's a gift. Now, that's clearly what I'm doing over there, is I'm being mechazik him by giving him this second shtar, that it should be a matana. So what he should do is, if he's smart, and he's got a problem of a bar mitzvah, so what he should do is he should pretend there's no sale, and he should hide, obviously, the original shtar, because they were going to say, wait a minute. Right? But he should pretend there was no sale, present the shtar of the matana, and then he's in good shape. Or vice versa. Suppose initially I give it to the matana, and then we find now a shtar that's dated later, in which the shtar is a mech. What's the value of a mecher over a matana? A normal matana is if somebody comes now to exercise a lien against the gift, some gift. You know, I give him a gift, and 2 days later somebody comes along and sues him for the field because of the fact that it turns out there was a lien against this field. So it's not going to be much of a gift. I want to protect him. So what can I do? If I'll write in the shtar of a matana gufa that I'm protecting him with a guarantee to cover anybody who exercises a lien, it's called achrayus nechasim, then I'm going to cancel the dinner of the bar mitzvah. Because then the bar mitzvah will say, hold on a second. People don't give gifts with guarantees. So if they don't have to guarantee a gift, give a gift. Okay, if something happens, what am I supposed to do? This is obviously a cover-up to prevent me from being the bar mitzvah. So therefore, I give it to separate shtaris. So now I've given him a matana to help him from the bar mitzvah problem, but now I want to protect him from when somebody's going to come and exercise a lien. So I also say that there's a sale. So now he can choose, depending on what the circumstances are. He's got two shtarot over here. So over there, it's for sure we understand that it was liyafot kocho. The first case was liyafot kocho, the kosavle mishum dina de bar mitzvah. In the opposite case, kosher came with a rishon was b'matana, therefore did not have achrayut nefasim to protect the buyer against the ostensible recipient, against someone who comes down to take the field away from him because he claims it was leaned to him earlier for an earlier debt. So there, if he writes the sheni bevecher over there, he wants to protect. And that means mishum dina de balchovo de kasafkin. So there, we understand that the reason that the shtar was written was clearly only in order to provide him additional protection in both of these cases. So where was Reb Nachman? I mean, Reb Nachman couldn't have been talking about cases like that because we understand what happened. He certainly wasn't being mevatel the shtar. He was attempting to help him out by giving him additional protection. So ela the case ish dehem bevecher shneim bematana. If we don't have any reason for the writing of the shtar, and there's no other Tosefta, it's not even a dekel that's mentioned over there, so then indeed bitel sheni et harishon. What does that mean, bitel? I mean, how does that work? My timer. Why is the fact that I have another shtar to the same exact amount, or the same exact description of a field, what happens to the other shtar? I said, why are we saying that the first shtar is no good? The first shtar certainly helps me in that it's pre-existing this other guy's lien, maybe. What would be the swara for this? Rambam says because the very fact that this guy now owns the second shtar, he is basically oduye udele. What happened over here is that the shtar holder is admitting that the first shtar is invalid. Why it's invalid? He's saying it was forged. It's not a good shtar. Therefore, I insisted on getting another shtar. So if he has now, why else does he have another shtar? So if he has another shtar, something is funny about the first shtar. Maybe there was a dog and he knew it wouldn't be typhus. Maybe the Adam were no good. Maybe somebody had forged the signature of the Adam. But clearly this guy wanted another star. He doesn't get anything out of it because it's a later star. So what's he doing with it? It must be that something's wrong with the first star. And he's admitting that it was forged. Ravacha Amar. Ravacha, that's my point. The point is that Achuli Achli L'Shibudin. There was Mechila of his initial Shibud. But he's not claiming that the first star was valueless. What he's doing in accepting the second star is he's saying that for some reason he's meichel that original she'ibud. Now there may be all kinds of interesting things going on as to why he would want to do that and so on. And the Tosis brings a couple of interesting cases, but we don't know what's going on beneath the surface. They may have some kind of mutual interest in a loan that the person made. Maybe, who knows? Maybe he needed money that this guy was willing to invest in a business of his, but only if there was a field that was available could the guy get the loan, and therefore needed a mortgage. So the guy wanted to be mevatel's lien because the bank wouldn't give a mortgage if it was only a second mortgage. I mean, you can use your imagination to figure out why we would think Achuli Achli. We don't have to know all of the facts, but it's certainly possible that it would have been meichel. And therefore we understand it was meichel. What's the nafkamina? It's a big nafkamina between these two cases. First of all, according to the way that we initially said it, Rafram's pshat, so then that means that he is admitting that the original shtar is a forgery, or that the Edim were no good, and therefore I needed a second shtar. But that means, lefid varav, the Edim are possible. So let's say he has another shtar that he presents with the same Edim, so then he's admitting, no, the shtar's no good. I mean, why did you take a second shtar out from the first one? Right? Obviously, if he says before that somebody forged the signature of the Edom, then he's not saying anything wrong with the Edom. But if we have grounds to think that maybe what he was made of was that these Edom are apostle, so then he can be an Eruiya Sahabi. So one nafkamina will be that this undermines the believability of these witnesses. Obviously, I mean, he can't undermine it for other people, but he can undermine it for himself. So it'll be very nugget if he tries to use these witnesses for something else. Or, there's another big nafkamina. What happens to the value of all of the produce in between the first star and the second star? He was acting as if he was the owner the whole time. Now all of a sudden, according to Rafram, he admits that it wasn't really a sale, the first one. It was a forgery. Okay, so then pay back all of the produce. Hey, who paid the property tax? What happened to the property taxes, right? That should be La Taxa. So said the name of the property tax was the Tasca. So who paid the Tasca? If you're saying that I didn't own it, fine, you didn't own it. So according to Rafram, so then that means that I didn't own it. It's the guy who's now selling me the field at the later date. So he owns it, he has to pay the taxes. According to Rebecca just says I'm Merkel Hashiba, but I certainly owned it, so I'm going to have to pay the taxes on it. It's a big enough convenience. My hobby, okay, fine. End of tangential Rebachman discussion. Now getting back to the question was, when are we going for this ksuba? According to Rashi Bichlal, according to Taisus, in the case where we have the source of the father. So my havi alodik su, but what lamais is the halacha? Tashma? Dom Rav Yidom Rav Shmuel, Mishum Rav Lazar Rav Shimon, Mone Matayim in Aresin, Vitosevet Min Anisui. Here we find, actually, that Shmuel Paskins, the way we said Ravuna, that the first 100, if she's an Amon, the first 200, if she's a Petula, is from the time of the Aresin, that is tonight based in. And the Tosefet is collected, of course, only from the time that it was written out in the Shtar, from the time of the Nisuin. You can only collect from the Nisuin from Nefasim Meshu Badim, because you don't have a Shtar earlier. And indeed, that's how we paskin. Without a Shtar, there's no collection from Nefasim Meshu Badim. Now, we've been talking about the cases over here where there's knas. The Torah actually has three different areas of knas. We have the ones, we have the mafata, and we also have the case of motzi shema, which it's time to look at in context of the other knasot. The halachas are, just to remind you briefly, that in the case of the mefate, we offer him a choice of either marrying the victim or paying a knas. In the case of the ones, we make him pay the knas, and then if the victim and father are willing, he has to marry her, both. And then in the case of a motzi shemra, where a person claims now, after he's already married this woman, now he's already taken her to the chuppah, and now it says that he has information that indicates that the reason that he hasn't found her to be a betulah is not just stam, she doesn't know what happened, but she's not a betulah, doesn't deserve her mataiti. He got information that she was actually mizana, a taftaf, while she was in arusa to him, and she's started misa, and there's witnesses. And so it turns out that it's a big fake out. So then he has, first of all, we beat him up, so he gets malchus. This is Vyisroto. And we also have a knaz of 100 shkolim instead of the chamishim shekel, which the Mishnah Erechim points out that saying something is worse than actually doing it. If you actually rape her, you'd only pay 50. But if you rape her reputation, so to speak, and say that somebody slept, but then you pay 100. Okay, very nice deal. But in any event, the suk is, we know that the onis and the fata are interrelated. We found that missing link was machlok, was abai, where's the missing link? We know that there's a missing link. Right? The missing link was either we dash in the kesef is the same, or we dash in asher lo rasa. That's the same. But we know that the two are interrelated, which is how we know that the shekel of one applies to the chamishim of the other, and the chamishim of one applies to the shkolim. Good. How about the din of the motzi shemra? How is that in context of the other knosses? What is unique about the motzi shemra? What's unique is that over there, first of all, it's linked to the dinim of Misa, because the Torah says, if it's true, and there are witnesses, so then we take the Nara out, and even though normally an Eshet Ish, the din of an Eshet Ish is Bechenek, in this case of the Nara, it's Beskila. And not only is it Beskila, but we take her to the Petach Beit Aviyah, and we actually are Sokel at that place, as if to say, look, Ru'u Gidulin Shegidalta. That's what we'll talk about. But that means that there's a special halacha, as the Torah says, Ki Nivala Asta B'Yisrael. Yisrael stresses that this has something to do with the nature of Yisrael. Now, we didn't, until now, we spoke about issues of a Gioret, of a Shivcha, but the only issue was because of the Betulah, because we assumed that once she's old enough to lose her betulim, so we assume that if she's over 3 years old, that certainly as a Gioret, or as a Shivcha, that she did lose her betulim, and therefore there was no din of Matayim, and so on and so forth. But it was not again any of the other halachas, other than that we'll assume she wasn't a betulah, and therefore there's no knas. But in the case over here of Motzi Shemra, we have an additional problem when it comes to Giyur, in which it makes no nafkamina how old she is, because it's not only the betulah issue that bothers us, it's the fact that it's not B'Yisrael. Why did the Torah specify B'Yisrael unless it meant that these unique halachas, three unique halachas, one of which is the din of Skila, one of which is the din of Yisruoto, one of which is the din of the Anshuoto, the Mea Shekel, and the truth is those two, the Mishnah counts as one, because the third one is really the halacha of Petach Beit Aviyah. All of that is a din in Yisrael. So therefore, says the Mishnah, if you have a Gioret, and she was mitgayeret with a girl who was below the age of 3. That's why we want to talk about the case where she was mitgayeret together with her daughter. Because as Tosafot points out, it's not, why in the world would we be megayer a child beneath the age of 3, unless the parent is there? So normally we say that, well, Besdin can be megayer ketanim, but that, says Tosafot, is only where they are begging us to be megayer them. We're certainly not going to say someone less than 3 years old. I mean, even Avraham Avinu was 3 years old. Someone less than 3 years old is saying, I have to be Jewish. I can't go on living like this. Very unreasonable. That Besdin would be Megayah then. So therefore, we take the normal case. The case is that this child is herself a Gioret. Okay? And now...
Who is the father?
Who cares? She's a goy. She doesn't have a father.
How is she getting engaged? Who took the Kedushin for her mother? No, it didn't.
Now she is now a Nara. At the time that she was Midgayeret, she was a child. She did. She did. She's old enough to take her own Kedushin. Of course. She's. Remember, either you're a Ketana or a Gedela, in terms of Chiyuvim, and in terms of Das, and so on and so forth. The only nafkamina, the din of Naira, is that if she has a father, then the Torah rewarded the things which are her to the father during that brief period. But as far as her rights and her halakha being a gedolah, she's a gedolah at the age of 12. So she goes ahead now, and it turns out that she was Mizana. And in fact, the guy was right that there were Eidim, she had been Mizana. Harezo Bechenet. So first of all, there's no din askew on her. Even though a Yisraelite under these conditions would have been niskelet, there's no din of skila, Harezo Bechenet, and there's no din of Petach Beit Av, there's no din of Measela, which includes no din of Malkus, there's no Visroto, there's no din of Anshuoto. So that's case A. Case B. How about if her mother was mitgayeret while she had already conceived her? So now she is born to a Jewish mother, but she was conceived by a Goyish woman. So what happens over there? So then, arezu biskila. So then we have a very interesting semi-halacha. When it comes to sekila, she has the same thing as a bas yisrael, and she's not bechenek, she's biskila. But when it comes to the relationship to the other issues of motzi shemra, there's no din of petach beta av, there's no din of meyasela, and therefore there's no din of v'anshoto. That's very strange, because I mean, it ought to be either or. Either the parsha is talking about b'Yisrael, or it's talking about that. I mean, how can it be? The Gemara will discuss this. If if her mother had been a giyoret, and now she was conceived and born after her mother's giyor, so then areik about Yisrael l'chol devoreha, under all circumstances, she's like a Bat Israel.
Why should just like a Bat Israel and not a Bat Israel?
Because there are issues that are not related to this sugya where there are, in fact, differences, like we saw by Chalitza.
What do we do? Leave out the Chavdos, Haredi, Bat Israel, Obra. Could Bat Israel tell you something?
It's, well, and I'm not saying it's coming to tell you that, but it does. Yesh la av, ve'in la petach beit av. Now, how literal is the pasuk? Is the pasuk telling us the essential conditions for the halacha bat yishemra? So suppose she has her father, and her father's very poor, he doesn't own a home. So I can't now, this is not referring to the earlier cases, I forgot about now the cases of Giyur, a normal case. I have a girl who comes from a very poor family, they don't own a home, and there's no petach, there's a beit avia. So did the Torah mean only if I can be mekayim this entirely, so that it literally diber akosov, the way it's written. So she has a father, but she doesn't have a petach, beit avia to bring her to. Or maybe her father maybe had a very rich manor, but he's dead. So now it's certainly not petach beit avia. I mean, she's not there. And there's no din of v'natan. There's a halacha of giving to her father the 100 shekel. So there is no father. So then what? No. Don't think that it's meant literally. Harezu biskila. Nothing has changed. Lo ne'emar petach beit avia elo l'mitzvah. The halacha of petach beit avia is a separate mitzvah. And that has to do with what the message that we want to broadcast over here, vis-a-vis raising children, but it's irrelevant to the halacha of the onesh. The onesh is skila, whether it's at Beit Aviyah or it's at the Beit Din, it's skila. Now, what is the makar that Gemara wants to know of each of these halachas? Essentially, we begin with the din, with the assumption that since the Torah stresses Yisrael, it means dafka b'Yisrael, and this whole halacha is said of Yisrael. In which case, minohane mile, how do we know that even though she's not a true Yisraelite because she was conceived as a goya, that nonetheless, some of these halachas apply, and that she's b'skil. Omer eish lakish, the omar kro, since the Torah says, uskalua anshei iraba avanim v'meta, ki astane v'alabi Yisrael, what, I mean, cut off her head and she will die. Yes, but I mean, it's a little redundant to say she will die. So, I mean, isn't that what skila means, to kill her? So why does it say, and then she will be good and dead? Yes, she will. So the extra word, umeita, is coming to tell me there's an additional case of umeita. This comes to add that even though she isn't completely b'Yisrael, because her conception was not b'Yisrael, nonetheless, she is a Yisrael in terms of this halacha. So then, I mean, so why not in terms of the whole thing? Yochi, I mean, Nami Dilke, Meyasel and Nami Lasham, instead. So why when it comes to the other issues of giving the guy his knas and giving the guy his malchus? Now remember, it does say over there also Yisrael. Gehotzi Shemra al Betulat Yisrael. But, I mean, in context, if they have a riboy in one issue, that this is called be Israel, because we made that, even though Horata B'Gdusha, why not say that it's Chal across the board, in the dinim of Motzi Shemer? So whether it comes to the case where she's guilty, so then the Skila is be Israel. So in the case where she's not guilty and he's guilty, So then Abdullah Bat Yisrael is also defined in the same way that the Meitah would have been. So if the Meitah is Beskila, is enough that she should be Horata, even if it's Shalom Bekdusha, but enough like that Bekdusha, so too the other way around, asks the Gemara. Omar Kra says the Pasuk, no, it says Vameta. Vameta means only in the context of this halakh of mita. I mean, you must admit it's a rather strange way of being marva. I mean, it's a little weird. Kill her and then she'll be good in bed. To say it that way, it's the best way you can come to be marva. That's what it's stressing. L'mita nidrapta. Umeta tells me that only the ribui that includes horata shalobi kedusha in the general set of benot Yisrael is only vis-a-vis the chiyav of skila component if she were guilty. But if he was the one who had been lying, we don't have the ribui to say albat Yisrael, that albatulat Yisrael, that includes even a horata shalobi kedusha.
He gets scot-free, the chatan, he gets.
It's always that way. The men, they always get away with murder.
Not
Malchus either. There's no dinner class, a special halacha. I mean, there's other things. There's other ways you can sue people for causing you damages. But not the dinner mitzvah. Remain.
You never
wrote
your
Yerusha. No, that's by the Onyx.
Yeah,
that's
the Onyx. Yeah.
That's by the Onyx. The Ema L'Rabot Horata. How do you know it's only coming now to be marve this halacha of the where she's mamish or atashma bikdusha? Maybe dafka if her mother was a giyoret, but she was already conceived and born as a Jewess. Well, why would I need a pasuk to be marve that? He Israeli d'mal yatai. Isn't that a Jewess? Here is where Moshe Baruch and Rabbi's diak in the Mishnah is important, because I mean, if that's the case, why is it saying she's like a Jew? So here is where Tosfos brings out that the truth is there are particular places, like from V'nikra Shmo B'Yisrael, that he's not kosher to be a dayan in chalitza, unless we have over here Avi V'Imo B'Yisrael, which you don't have here. So there are cases where there's special ribuyim in the Torah that add an additional level of what it means to be a Jew. But in terms of Yichus alone, there's no reason to say that that's the case over here. She would certainly be called a Abetulat Bat Yisrael. That she is. So that would be Israelit Malayatayim. Okay, fine. So now you're telling me that it's to be Marv even Horata Shalovik Dusha. How do you know it's not to be Marv Horata Vileidata Shalovik Dusha? I will ask. Tosfos says, what kind of crazy question is that? If you have a list of things, you always take the least Kiddush, obviously. Says Tosfos, but the point is over here, once you're telling me it doesn't literally mean Yisrael, and when it says Benos Yisrael, it doesn't mean Benos Yisrael. Maybe it doesn't mean it. Maybe it's coming to me to call something else. But I mean, how do you have like a half-baked Yisrael? Either she is or she isn't. So you're telling me I'm not being makbid on that. So maybe it means I'm not being makbid at all. No, because I mean, came be Yisrael, my Ahanilei. In other words, if the Torah on the one hand is stressing that she has to be a Bas Yisrael, a Psulas Yisrael, and on the other hand it's stressing, but I don't mean that 100%. So that means it's forcing us to find a compromise. Therefore, I can't look to the case of Horata Vileidata Bikdusha, because I mean, so then it's not forcing me any compromise. But that is a Bat Yisrael. If you would have told me otherwise, I would have anyway assumed that's a Bat Yisrael. It can't be telling me it could be Horata Vileidata Shalom Bikdusha, because then what's the point of telling me he's Bat Yisrael? Therefore, it must be that I have to seek this compromise. Horata Shalom Bikdusha, Vileidata Bikdusha, is what the Ribui is coming to tell me. Because if not, what's the point of saying Bechlal B'Yisrael? Omer Rabbi Yossi Barabbi Chanina Hamotzi Shemra Alayetoma Patur. You say that when it comes to the issue of the Petach Beit Avia, it doesn't mean it literally. Well, I want to tell you something. I say that since it says V'natnu La'Avia Na'ara, you're supposed to give the father the Mea Shekel. If she doesn't have any father, the whole thing falls apart. There's no Chiyuv Bichlal. That's what I say. Masim Rabbi Yossi Bar Avi Mitem Rabbi Yossi Bar Zvida. It says like this, Ima, and this is of course not by the parsha of Motzi Shemra, but we're assuming that the sugyas are interrelated. So when it comes to the din by Ones Mefata, so where it says over there, and by Ones you will note, by Ones it says also the same lashon of La Vianara, right? Give to the father. Okay. But when it comes to that sugya, we darshan im the imma in yima in Aviyah. And that tells me that either she or the father can say, I don't want to marry this guy. Remember, we just had that. So that is talking about, indeed, the case of Mifata. However, we know that that applies to an Ones as well, because we had our missing link between the Psukim of Ones and Mifata. Once it's true about an Ones, so now we have a little bit of a problem, because by the Ones it also says, V'datan l'avian na'ara. But we darshan from there, or the way Rashi understands it, it's not that we literally darshan from there, it's just that the Tana takes for granted that even though it mentions Aviha, that that is not coming to be B'mayit Yitoma, but only to tell me that if there is a father, then he is Zofet to her Knas, the same way that other Shevach of the Urim go to the father. So we see from there that it's L'rabot Yitoma L'Knas, despite the fact that it says B'feresh V'natan L'Aviha Na'ara. Divrei Yosi Aglili. Now I don't understand. You're coming along now to argue with the Tana over here, and to tell me, no, it says a Tana via Nahara, if there's no via Nahara, forget about it. There's Yitoma is not included in this halacha. I mean, here we see when it comes to an Ones, it's included. Who motiv lavu mefarekla, whoever who is, because we don't know whether who is Rabbi Yosi Bar Ovid or who is Rabbi Yosi Bar Zvida, we haven't. But whoever who is, he was the one who asked the question, he figured out the way to get out of this question himself. It's talking about Bebo'olea v'acharkach nityapma. So really, the Avia Nara is Mamaya the Yitoma in all cases. Whether you're talking about the Knas, you're talking about the Matsi Shemra, no daddy, no Knas. But suppose there was a daddy at the time of the Ones, or at the time of the Matsi Shemra. So now already the Halak of Knas kicks in. So now the father dies before she gets her Knas. So then the Knas is already a Chiyam, so she gets the Knas in that case. If there's no father, then there's nobody to take her Knas away from her. She goes Latzma. Rav Omar, Rava says, you're wrong about the whole thing. A Yitoma, who was the victim of a Mitzah Shemra, he's Chayav. And the din of a Beit Avia or a father is just that if there is a father, then it goes to the father. But it's not Ma'akev, the whole Tashlumi. And I'll prove it to you, says Rava, Midatani Ami. Take a look at the Braita that Rav Ami brought. And the Braita darshans the posik of Yanshur Tomea Kesef, Tiotzi Shemra al Bitulat Israel. So we darshan over there in that writer, Betulat Yisrael velo Betulat Gerim. The Zalok was only said if she's an actual Yisrael. Now, let me ask you something. Does a Gioret, she's about Gerim over here. She's a Gioret. Does she have a father? Nope. She's got no father. If she's got no father, then obviously, if Yitoma was the Yisraelis, is Potter. So I already know that she's Potter. In other words, what you've got to be telling me is that in the same case, where had she been a Yisraeli, there would have been a Chiyah, but since she's a Giyoret, there's a Ptur. But if you're going to tell me that the Yisraeli without a father, there's no din of Knas, so then certainly there's no din of Knas on the Giyoret without her being a Giyoret, because by definition she can't have a father. Where am I going to have to pay the father? What father? Who father? Is it Goy? It's nothing to do with her. She's basically is a virgin birth. The other way around. So so what do we do? Say, yeah, Mitbishleim, Gihai, Gavna, Bistrol, Machayev. If you're going to tell me that an equivalent case of a Jew, he'd have to pay even though there's no father. That would explain why we need the pasuk. But if you're going to tell me that even if she was entirely Jewish but had no father, so a Yisrael Kahai Gavna would anyway be father. So why would I think? So I think since she's a Gior, she's more Chayev. I mean, why would I think that? I mean, has to be Yisrael Patur, Begerim, mi boy. To me, that's an absolute proof that the Yitoma is included in the Parsha, Mati Shemra. Otherwise, the whole business about the Giyorit breaks down. Omer Eshlaki, Hamotzi Shemra Laktana Patur, Shenebar V'natnu L'Aviha Na'ara. And remember, we had this sugi before. When it says Na'ara with a hey, it means a full class Na'ara. And this is, of course, Lafuki. We had a Machlokas earlier, whether there's a halacha about a Nara, including a Ketana, the Machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So it says, Reish Lakish, where you have a Nara Malay, Dibera Katuv, there indeed it's telling me not a Ketana. But if you don't have a Nara Malay and there's no hay, there it's not talking about a Nara, I mean. There it's not talking about a literal Nara, it includes a Ketana too. Oh, Maskiv Lorav Achabarabo, I don't understand what you're talking about. You're telling me the only way that I know is that we're referring to a Nara, not a Ketana, is because it says a Nara with a hay? What would I have thought? That the Parsha Matzi Shemra includes a Ketana? Remember that the Parsha Matzi Shemra has two components. Either he's right or she's right. But in the part where he's right, it says, and if it turns out to be true, indeed, lo nimtzu betulim la nara, which of course means that we have Adam that she was Zinta, But we would do that to a ketana. Ketana lot, but onshini. So the ketana is not included. So I know that anyway. The correct way of being medayik the pasuk is not that because it says nara malei divera katub, therefore I know that we're talking by boti shemra about a nara, not a ketana. It's rather an indication that in a place where it doesn't say nara malei, that it doesn't mean nara malei, and therefore it's a raya to the chachonim who hold that a ketana also has a knas. Because over there it doesn't say nara with a, it says nara with a. That's the point. Ella, the right way to say this is kan nara. Here, by motzi shemra, indeed you're limited to nara. But hakol makom shenemar nara without a hay, then indeed it would include afilu kitana. And that would prove that the dinim of knas, even though it says nara, but the missing hay tells you, look even to a kitana. Toni shila. So shila now points out in the brisa. That means that basically we have three separate halachas when it comes to the din over here of the motzi shemra. So shalosh midot, actually, I shouldn't say that. Three different dinim of a nara that was mizana. So first of all, we have the bo'la edim, the beit chamia. The case that we're talking about over here of the motzi shemra is he already had taken her to the chuppah. So that means that now she's the beit chamia. She no longer lives in her father's home. Now we find out that she was mizana before the marriage, or before the chuppah, which means that she was mizana as an arusa while she was still the beit chamia. In that case, the halacha is when we find out she's into the beit avia, then there's a special chiyuv of otzio et anara petach beit avia, even though now she's not living in beit avia. And the point of that is to say, klomar, ru'u gidulim shegidaltem. And only in this case. In other words, if lamaisa, I mean, you can always say anything she'll do for the rest of her life, ru'u gidulim shegidaltem. That we don't say. Normally, if we were going to be so killer for, like in the case where she was not coming to Beit Avia, but since by now she's not living in Beit Avia, suppose she was actually in Atlanta while she's still in Beit Avia, and we find out about it to Beit Avia. Do we do the skila of Petar Beit Avia? No. We don't. That's the other thing. Bola ain't in the Beit Avia if before now, the whole story, not a case of Motzi Shemra, the normal case of Yahimatsay Na'arabitula, who was Moreset, and she agrees to sleep with the guy, there's also a field of steel, but it doesn't say anything about Beit Aviyah. So over there, Bo'la Edom, that's the second meat of the Nara. Bo'la Edom, the Beit Aviyah, she's in Ta, while she's in Beit Aviyah. So if we don't Ta, yes, but Al-Katat Shara here, we publicize it the way we do Bichlal, Skila. If Sarcha, Ulebesov Bagra, so then Tidon Bechenek. If, however, we have a case of it as a normal Nara who was Mizana, so then if we don't have this special case over here of the Nara Betula who's Muhureset, so there we don't have the din of Skila Bechal. We have the normal din of Chedek of an Eshet Ish. Okay, so already now she's not a Nara, so then she's an Eshet Ish. Then it's Bechenek, even though at the time of the Chet it was a Nara, but she has to be a Nara in order for all of these things to apply. So these are the three different halachas. Why do we say Ru Gidulim Shegidaltem? That's the point. Since she's now Bebeit Chamia, we want to publicize, this has nothing to do with us. It's not the fact that our Kala is now being miskelet because she's Mizana after marrying our son. She was Mizana back at her father's house, and we want to publicize that. We don't want to be the ones who take responsibility for it. But if Lamaisa, there was no reason why anybody would have associated with Beit Chamia because she wasn't yet in Beit Chamia, the Aden came before now, while it was still Beiratin, so then why would we have to do it to Beit Chamia? That's the point. So the Ru Gidulim Shegidaltem is only when I need to contrast. This is from you, that's the point. Not Ru Gidulim Shegidaltem, let's blame the parents for the sins of the child. It's different than people think. Because if that were the point, so then why, if it was the Arus would be the same thing? Ru Gidulim Shegidaltem, we're trying to bring a message home to the parents. It's not the point of the message to the parents. It's the point of the Zikui of the in-laws that we're saying Ru Gidulim Shegidaltem. This is you, this is not us. It's not the Rajpur's Masper. That way this it works out very nicely. So these become now the three dargis. What's very interesting, what this means is, a very strange thing, what this means is that the din of Motzi Shemra is said dafka after she's already in the chuppah, and then we have the knas of Nea Shekel, and it's paid to the father? Isn't by definition, after Nisuin, the father doesn't have any rights to her? So how come over here the knas is given to the father? So this is a big machlokes mishnah, whether it means literally the knas is given to the father, which is what the way the Rosh understands it. It's literally given to the father, that violates the normal understanding of the Suyais. That's because the Mochi Shemra's attack is essentially on the father. And that relates to the rule Gedulim Shegidalta. Okay, other Rishonim learn that even though it says to give to the Aviyah Nara, it's very dochor, but even though it says to give to the Aviyah Nara, it doesn't mean to give it to him to be his. It means that since she's got such a vicious husband, don't give the money to her while he still has any kind of yad over her. Give it to the father to protect the money from him.
Okay.
Yes, clearly.